Maybe why don't we just go around the horn? Jonathan, why don't you start?
Yeah, hey everybody. I am the community lead here at Mythical Games. Run all things community on our flagship game, NFL Rivals, and run marketing there too. It's been a total blast, and we just hit 3 million downloads, or right on top of it, for NFL Rivals. Blockchain-enabled games for the masses. So that's what we're doing.
Thanks for joining us today, man.
Thanks for having me.
Dumbo, you want to go? You're next on my screen.
Hi everyone. I'm Luke, aka Dumbo. Oh, Dumbo, actually, but it is what it is. I don't have to change my Zoom name now that I've said it, which makes me inside this horrible because everyone just thinks I'm called Dumbo all the time. But yeah, I work as community lead slash marketing on Flow and Dapper Labs as well, sometimes depending. So things like NBA Top Shot and stuff like that. If you're not familiar with Flow, well, they do NBA Top Shot. And they were built by the same team that did CryptoKitties, and we're just trying to bring Web3 to the masses through things like NFT collections, like NFT projects like NBA Top Shot, but also other things like account linking, which is this really cool innovative product upgrade and stuff like that. But yeah, excited to be here today to talk about it all.
Thanks, Luke. Appreciate it, man. Juan?
All right, I'm already self-conscious, but I have four names, and people here have a single name here. But I'm Juan. I go by Juanga as well. It's like a little nickname. I'm here. I work at SoRare, really helping lead up the purchase experience of how you buy cards. SoRare is a sports fantasy game, I guess how you describe it, digital collectible games. We have a lot of people who are just sports fans as well as not necessarily Web3 people that play the game, and we're just trying to continue going.
Appreciate you coming, Juan. Tyler.
Yeah, I'm Tyler D. I'm the NFT lead over at Lucky Trader. We do media covering the entire Web3 space. So I kind of cover it all from art to PFPs and into sports NFTs. And luckily, the sports sector has been pretty exciting here the last few months. So I'm excited to chop it up with you guys here this afternoon.
And you're super familiar with the Drainmakers product, right? From DraftKings.
Yeah, so DraftKings Rainmakers. So I mean, DraftKings is one of our partners over at Lucky Trader. So we certainly we built some tools to help DraftKings Rainmakers players optimize teams. We put out a lot of content for that game as well. So yeah, I can speak to that a bit.
Thanks so much for joining, Tyler. Michael, last but not
Hi.
least.
Thanks. So I'm Michael Rubinelli. I'm the Chief Gaming Officer at WAX. As the elder statesman here on this call, I've, done a lot of things in my career. I start off life building the original John Madden football on the Genesis at EA, along with NHL PA, what was then NHL hockey, then became NHL PA hockey, then back to NHL hockey. I've also built baseball games of the day, tennis games of the day. So a lot of history building, kind of, renowned sports franchises. From there, I went to Midway, worked on NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. And so sports gaming is a love of mine, but now I'm the Chief Gaming Officer at WAX. And we also believe in a cross-chain world where we bring blockchain experiences to core gamers, as witnessed by 2 weeks ago, our flagship title Brawlers went live in the Epic Games Store. And then last week, we announced a 6-month promotion slash collaboration with Amazon Prime Gaming, where you can download Brawlers and get all kinds of free stuff just to come in and try it and see what it's all about. And we think that level of kind of incentive will change the behavior of core gamers around the world, or so we hope.
Michael, thanks for joining.
Great to be here again.
You're always welcome to come on more times too. So,
Thank you.
I would, for our viewers, I think you guys got the point. This is going to be a sports related episode. So, it was a pleasure for me to try and round up everybody here on this call. We have some pretty heavy hitters in the industry here from a sports perspective. So, maybe Huda, can you just give like a brief like intro of what has been going on in the industry so far and your thoughts on things?
Maybe kind of like a market review. And I'll probably just start with October because it's really what everyone's talking about. And I guess, guys, what do you think? Can we safely declare that October was our first October in NFTs? It feels like
In a few years. Yeah.
It was cool to see. I know I wasn't expecting it, but I guess, yeah, ultimately the numbers don't lie. 307 million in cross-chain NFT sales in October. That broke a 7-month streak of declining monthly NFT sales, which was great. Forecast 500 NFT index climbed to over 1800. That's reflecting that the month of October was actually the second best month of the year when it comes to the value of NFTs. It's second only behind January. It's a lot of hype, though, this month, and really still continuing into November. And I said this to Johan earlier, in a way, it feels more organic than it did at the beginning of the year, even when back then we were doing 2 to 4 times the sales volume. Something just feels different now. But buyers, sellers, transactions, they are all trending down. Transactions in particular, they're at a low point for the year. Last week, only 1.4 million transactions. And then I want to end here on wash sales, which are ramping back up. Traders may be shifting away from those SoFi platforms like FriendTech and Stars Arena, moving back to NFTs for now maybe, but 59 million in wash sales last week. This week already at over 60 million. And it probably makes sense that traders are trying to grind out maybe the final points that they can get at the end of season 2 of Blur Farming. So November remains to be seen if we'll continue riding October's momentum and also that hype in Bitcoin ETFs. But I guess we'll see how it plays out, right?
Thanks, Huda, for that. As you know, like Crypto Slam first started tracking MLB champions as one of the first projects ever. Our founder and CEO, co-CEO Randy Wassinger, pretty much built the website for that purpose. And that was in like 2018. So fast forward 5 years ahead, we're still talking about sports NFTs. They're still around. The use case is very much there. The collectors aren't going away. What do you guys see as the advantage of NFTs to the sports collectible community? I'll open that question up to everybody who wants to chime in.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest and most obvious solution is that NFTs providers, they're permanent. I mean, I had a friend steal my Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I know it's not sports, but I had steal my Yu-Gi-Oh cards as a kid. And I'm sure there was plenty of that with baseball trading cards, basketball, football cards. So those cards are ephemeral, which I guess does suggest that the rarity decreases, but there's no verification. You have obvious fraud. You have no way to know the total quantity. How do you price, your Sammy Sosa rookie card? You have no idea. It's completely contingent on what the seller is willing to buy, and you have no data. NFTs give you that public database that you can then price back off of. So price discovery is one. You have permanence, protection against fraud and loss, and a verifiable record. And then next step, it's an incredibly versatile technology. I mean, what can you do with the baseball card? No one made games. And you can't get into the IRL games with them, but you could do the same thing with NFTs. There are ways to technologically just verify ownership and say like, okay, you have this, you can come into the game and watch the Yankees or watch the Red Sox, depending on which side of that divide you're on. Or you can jump into a game and jump and use it as an in-game asset in the sandbox or essentially.
Yeah,
go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I can piggyback on that. And I think a lot of us, at least in my generation, I'm 38, so I'm dating myself. But, you know, we grew up collecting physical cards, right? Baseball cards, football cards, basketball cards is what we did. And then, like, in 2020, 2021, NBA Top Shot was one of the first, you know, digital collectibles that I got into. And the concept just made sense to me. And I had a good friend who was actively in the physical card market. And I saw how he had to travel to card shows to find buyers, to find product for himself to buy. He had to take such good care of the cards from a storage perspective. He had to go get them graded. All that is such a headache. And that's why digital collectibles are better. Like, they have all those advantages. You've got 24/7 marketplaces that run to anyone across the entire world. The provenance is right there on the blockchain, and you don't have to really worry about the storage other than just keeping your NFT safe, which is, you know, a different topic, certainly an aspect. So, you know, conceptually, it just made sense to me. And I wonder, so I've got 2 kids at home, 3 and 4, are they going to have any physical cards, or are they only going to have digital cards? I think we're trending in that way. So it's going to be a fun evolution to watch.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in if you don't mind. I think you can have a whole show around kind of tactile kind of asset ownership, that you feel a card, you look at it, you see the history of it, you understand it, you appreciate it. And maybe that's a very generational thing versus a digital version of it, which is not quite as like, oh, it's on my phone, or I can look at it on my desktop. It's not quite as, I think, emotionally kind of impactful. Like, I own it, and yes, I have provenance, and I see the chain of custody and all that fun stuff. And that's great. And I think from a kind of, you know, felonious standpoint, it's wonderful. There's something about holding, you know, a Michael Jordan rookie card, right? There's something about holding a Black Lotus, you know, card, if you will, if you're Magic together. Like, there's something about that. And we can argue whether that has real value or not. And then maybe, like I said, it is generational. I think Tyler's right. I think we're trending away from that, right? Because, you know, people don't want to be weighed down by the possessions. But there's something really endearing about, I own a Rembrandt painting. I don't own a digital version of it. I own a Rembrandt, and it's worth, you know, $50 million, and that can't be disputed kind of thing. The thing, though, that I want to say, I think, that's really super interesting, and we talked about this, I think, a little bit last time I was on, was the comparisons of Web 1 to Web 3, right? And if you look at Web 1, Web 1 was, by all accounts, a massive failure, all these companies going out of money, the dot-com, the dot-bomb, all that stuff. But what was born out of Web 1 was Amazon and was Google and was all these use cases that weren't known. I think the same is very much true for Web 3 and NFT specifically. Like, I don't think there's the perfect use case yet, the North Star of kind of what is the value or the impact of owning an NFT. And an NFT, by definition, by the very definition, is a programmable key. Right? What does it allow you to do? Right? What does it give you access to? What is the utility? And finding that utility and like, oh, I have to have this and now I get it. Like, you need this kind of broadly, like, kind of elevator pitch style description of what an NFT does that people like, oh, I get it. Like, I think candidly, the best example was, you know, the Coachella Music Festival sold, you know, 10 lifetime VIP all access badges for every single musical event, that whether it's Stagecoach or Coachella, it's backstage, it's all the parties, like the coolest thing ever. And it was an NFT and they sold 10 of them on auction. Like that right away, like, oh, I get it. I own this. I can go anywhere in the Coachella kind of ecosystem forever. And if I want to sell it, I can. If I want to use it, I can. Like, it's this great thing. And, you know, they sold at $500,000 a piece, which in the hype standards isn't very high. But when you look at utility, like, I think that paradigm, like, I instantly get it. I love Coachella. I love feeling like I have access. I feel special. VIP, parties, backstage, like that has a certain value to me. $500,000 for life? I don't know. I don't have that kind of money. But if you look at what that paradigm was, they took an NFT that was a collectible and it had artwork, which had value. It had rarity. There's only 10 in the world. Like all that. And they said, here's how you use it. And so as a species, I can divine like, oh, this is what that's worth to me. Now it's not worth as much as what people paid for it, because like I said, I don't have the ability to pay that. But right away, you're able to connect those dots. And so showing real value that people in mass can say, I get it. Like, we need that over the hump, I get it kind of moment. Like, oh, this is why NFTs exist. And knowing that they're completely programmable and it's up to the creator and the product owner to decide what that is. I think ownership, provenance, all that stuff matters. And I think being on the distributed ledger, trustless, proofless, open, permissionless, all that stuff, I think that's all great. But it's going to come down to, why do I own this, right? Why, like the why, not the what or the how. Like, that's the most important thing. And if people focus on why, we'll find that use case. People go, yeah, NFTs are great for this, this, and this. And there certainly is a collectibility to it. But I think the thing that puts it over the top where you don't have that tactile argument is tied to utility.
So I think there's a proof point here for generational compatibility. It's as simple as that, like being digitally native versus not digitally native. Beyond even, you know, verifiability and pure blockchain. We have an example of that from today. So Victor Wembanyama is rookie NBA, absolutely crushing it. Like, his card on SoRare, his unique card on SoRare today, sold for about $110,000. His most expensive physical asset so far, I think, is about $67,000, if I have to like double check on eBay. We wouldn't expect to see that for Jordan, right? For Scottie Pippen or other players from a different generation. But there is perhaps something along the lines of just generational congruence. People don't want to, there's a pleasure in that tactileness that it's hard to describe, but I don't know how much different generations value that. So that's right. That's another one I'd add to that.
I agree.
Do you guys think AR is going to lessen that need we have for to hold something, that tactileness of it? You know, like maybe when you own a moment and that moment actually plays out in your living room because you have glasses on and can see it. Do you think that does away with the need to feel it?
I don't.
No, otherwise Magic Leap wouldn't have gone bankrupt.
I think it's a case of yes, but, and I know there was a saying no, maybe the argument no, but it's the alternative, but I'm more optimistic. I think it does, but not in the current version of AR. Like, I think AR is just still... Like, the vision for it is very clear and strong. But until, like, I can be sat here and I can have a whole screen just pop up in AR and it's super easy to use and integrate to my day-to-day, then when that happens, sure. But I think in the current versions of AR, no.
I guess I don't see them as rivalrous. It's a different experience. And obviously it's hard to replicate that. So the physical will be there. It has its own uniqueness. When you go to a menu, a restaurant, you touch the menu, and if it's high quality paper, it feels different. But the experiences that something like an AR at scale would enable is just net new and incremental, I think, more than substitute. So we'll be able to like live differently and experience differently rather than substitute away from it. That's at least how I'm viewing it.
Yeah. Something just popped into my head. Like, I go to a lot of conferences and I meet a lot of people, and they hand me some of the better people who do that type of role too, on the other side of things, they hand me this really thick business card. And the thicker, the better. I think they all go for the thickest business card there is. And it's so that you feel that tactile thing. So I don't think that's ever going away. I just think there's certain things that needs to be tactile and things that don't. Like, for example, that access that Michael talked about, you could go to a sports game and meet a player and shake their hands and take a picture with them. Like, that's, that part needs to be in real life, right? Maybe the NFT or the access doesn't need to be.
I'll tell you the thing for me when we talk about kind of AR versus VR versus tactile versus the digital kind of crossing digital divide. Like, I think these are all really valid points, and I think it is generational. I think part of the thing about the rookie cards for Jordan versus Victor Wembanyama is also the, like, you know, Jordan was a rookie in the 80s, right? So it's got its age and all that fun stuff. I think the thing that really the forcing function for me, or the way I look at it, is I have only so many minutes in my day that are discretionary, right? Very busy. And so my most valuable asset in my life is not how much money I have, but how much time do I have? And how do I choose to spend my time? Like, my time is really precious. And so if you can give me an experience, whether it's an AR looking at an actual scene of an NFT that I own play out, or I can watch on YouTube, or not, like, is that a better use of my time? Like, how am I spending my time? Is my time being spent? Is there a validation there? And so if you can give me a better use of my time, then I will do that more often than what I used to do. It's a behavioral change. It's a shift, right? Maybe it's tied to incentive. Maybe it's tied to less friction, like whatever that wants to be. But if you use that as a kind of a, you know, like I said, a guidepost of what decisions do we make. And we do that from a game standpoint. So on Brawlers, I always said, you know, we're not competing with other Web3 games. We're competing with Netflix, and we're competing with Spotify. We're competing with Call of Duty. Like, you've got 5 minutes in your day or 5 hours in your day. I don't know. But if you choose to spend that time with us instead of doing something else, are you better rewarded, or you feel more fulfilled? And that as a bit of a way to kind of look at things, like, okay, I get it. I think the AR thing is niche and cool, but I don't think it scales, and I don't think it's a better use of time. It's something like, oh, that was fun, I'll never do that again, right? That kind of thing. And I'm a huge fan of AR and VR, by the way, so I'm not disparaging the art form. I actually think there's use cases that are so exceptionally cool on the horizon that I can't wait to experience.
Right. I mean, think about the most popular AR product that ever launched, to my knowledge. It's Pokemon Go. And it had a massive moment, but I didn't see people holding up their phones to play the game. They looked at their phones to play the game. They looked at the virtual world that's created in the game rather than the layering on top of reality that existed. And there are fun things to do with Snapchat. I guess Snapchat also maybe more popular than Pokemon Go, but I don't know, it's a standalone product. It's Pokemon Go. And it just didn't last. It didn't build enough. And frankly, tech just wasn't there to support that. So it's hard to know when that will catch on. And I agree with Juan that it's a different layer of experience. They're not one-to-one. So we have to create, if we want AR to take off, you have to create those experiences that are worth it, that are new and whole cloth and don't have a parallel in reality.
Huda, are you still tracking what Apple's doing on with their VR thing?
I mean, I'm not keeping up with it. And I don't know that they've put out any new info. In fact, probably right now I'm paying more attention to MetaQuest 3 that came out, because that is heavily AR focused, and it's fascinating. I'm already seeing like content on YouTube pick up. It's like, to a degree, I'm surprised by, and people talking about how they're going to be able to replace their screens, their monitors, and starting to see physical stuff evaporate even more because of that. So it's just really, really interesting.
Well, I think we've talked about two types of NFTs so far, the collectible and also the access pass. Do you guys see like a divergence in your industries regarding those two items? And which, like, for I know for sure, like, So Rare and Top Shot and NFL All Day, like, you guys are particularly in one direction and maybe not the other. How do you guys see those things interacting?
I don't think we are in one way or another because, you know, take NBA Top Shot, they partnered with the NBA last year, maybe a couple months later when it actually went public, but we did the All-Star Access Passes. Right. So for anyone not familiar, basically it's an NFT collectible, one for each NBA team, that then gets you access to the All-Star for the next 5 years, with a bunch of VIP access, behind the scenes, access to players, games, etc. And that is both a collectible and an all-access pass. And so I think that they will and should kind of always intersect. Now, some of the NFTs will just be pure collectibles and some NFTs will just purely be for access. But I think in the sports world, when it comes to the fans and what they want, I think there should always be some crossover. I think the most desired collectible should have some sort of access perks or extra utility in that sense, because that adds to the collectibility of it.
On the server side, I mean, there's yes, as you're saying, and then it's an in-game item. It's a game, and you're to a large degree, and you're playing with that in game, and that can get you other cards as rewards. That can get you, if you collect enough of them, unlock these experiences as we're talking. So the answer is, I guess, yeah, I mean, there is always the collectability component and what we call a utility component, and they all combine to give you some kind of extra benefit over a typical regular game. But like ultimately, Sorare is also, should be, a fun game. People like to play for it just because you're such a sports fan. And so how your lineup for the NBA is doing this week is a part of your life. You could just live it on Sorare or on another platform as well. And I think that's the beauty of these things like Rivals, Top Shots, Sorare. You're living it on your day-to-day. You're playing it. It's part of your overall fan experience. It's an enhanced fan experience.
Yeah, look, I think this is obvious. I've talked about this a lot and we'll continue to bang this drum. Like NFTs in games as items you use to play the games and have the ability to sell them, like that is such a massive sea change in the industry. If you look at the number of crypto gamers, it's less than 50 million in the world. It's split across, what, 6-7 prominent chains. It's really a small audience and nobody really wants to try to attract those people because you're spending a lot of money to try to fish in a very small pond. Whereas the real lift for the movement is in the core gaming audience, which is about 3.2 billion players in the world, right? And they spent $187 billion last year and didn't own a single thing. You think about now that you have a fiat off ramp for the stuff that you bought, you're going to monetize more, you're going to download more, you're going to pay more, you're going to install more because you're no longer trapped. The whole notion of I played World of Warcraft, I've got $5,000 in, I can't quit now because I feel guilty. That's a terrible place for a gamer to be in. So the fact that I've spent money and I can leave and I have free will and I don't feel burdened by this, like that's such a massive, massive thing. And to the quote unquote investors that are in this space now, like that's really the power of NFTs, right? That freeing nature notion of I have, you know, domain over my assets. Like I can do with them what I want. I paid for them. I bought them. I own them. I can sell them. I don't have to worry about Epic banning me for selling my, you know, my Fortnite account or League of Legends allowing me to sell skins that I bought that I never use. Like that's such a freeing notion. The challenge for publishers today is what is that business model? Because right now we're way too far on the player side, which is ironic to hear me say. Like right now, players own everything and sell everything, and the developers are fighting for that market fee, that creator fee that they get, and that doesn't work. And then they're trying to figure out how to do seasonal passes. There is a balance that needs to be struck where we bring it back where players own a lot of things, but not all things. And because the developer and the publisher still needs to run a business, right? Like the servers aren't free, support isn't free, like you know, engineering efforts, product efforts, those aren't free. Like there has to be a give and take. Right now, it was way too much give before it was way too much take. And now I think you'll find us settle in the middle. But the power of digital asset ownership, again, I didn't say NFTs because we think language is very intentional and important. You don't talk about wallets, you talk about accounts. Like getting gamers comfortable with coming in and, oh, by the way, it's on the blockchain. No, it's not. Yeah, it is. But it feels like a regular game. And yet I get to sell my stuff, right? But the blockchain powers all this, but you don't really need to know that up front. You just need to know that eventually so you feel safe and secure. And there are like, I think that's this intentionality in asset ownership tied to games. It's really, really important. So when Juan talks about Sorare, I play this, I get this, I add this, I upgrade this, I craft this, like, but it's yours to decide with what you want, not what you license through your terms of service. Like, and that's such a powerful thing. And once a North Star exists and players get religion around that, gaming will be changed forever. And I think that's in the next kind of 2 to 3 years.
I mean, to piggyback off of Michael, and not to sound too much like a shiller, but that's exactly what we're trying to do at Mythical Games, particularly the NFL Rivals. We are trying to tackle that core audience. It's a mobile game, so we're tackling mobile gamers. Mm-hmm. We're tackling NFL fans, and we're not after the Web3 gamers. It's fishing in a really expensive but tiny pool, and it's an incredibly fickle pool of players. They want exactly what they want, and there's not a lot of versatility to that. Whereas with traditional gamers, they take the games that they get. And we have actually had players come in and say, I like this because it's football. I didn't know these were NFTs. I have a crypto wallet. What's that?
Right.
They're creating accounts, password, username protected. There's a secondary marketplace in the web that we're bringing into the game. We're the first people to bring secondary transactions to App Store and Google Play. So like, we're really trying to convince these trillion-dollar behemoths to change their ways. And we actually got Google to issue a new policy on this for the benefit of the entire industry. So we're really trying to push that notion. And also, to Michael's point, there is a balance. You don't want to own every single thing, because then everything like shoots to the moon and craters in value. So we have in-game currencies that are just database values. But the most, you know, the key items in the game, those are tradable. Our NFT trading player cards capture moments in time, so that way they're collectible for the people that want to be completionists for their players or for their teams. And they're also tradable, so you can opt in and out based on the event configurations, or if that player gets injured for the season and you don't want to think about it anymore, you can sell it out to somebody for a song and go invest in the players that you want.
Jonathan, what are some of the successes that you guys have had? Like, I think it's around the industry, I attend a lot of spaces and things like that on Twitter and X, and your guys' game comes up usually pretty often when it comes to how do we onboard the masses, and like a Web3 game that's not really seen as a Web3 game. Like, what can you tell us about your game and your launch?
Yeah, so we launched in April this year into kind of like a public beta that we called the off season with a zero. And then we really launched like full on in August this year and really started investing in our growth marketing. So in tandem with the NFL season. Thus far, we're right on top of 3 million downloads on the game. We have six-figure daily active users. Our monetization and retention numbers are above the median for the industry. So we're really focused on trying to build that sticky product that's a game you're going to keep coming back to and you're happy to put your money into. Because one day, if you want, you can get your money out. So we're really succeeding there with rivals. We launched Nitro Nation World Tour three weeks ago, and I think it already hit 500,000 downloads. And that's building on the legacy of our OG favorite, Blanco's Block Party, which I think was built on a fourth version of EOS, if anyone pour one out for EOS. But that, I think, eclipsed around 1 million downloads. And we'll be pouring out to mobile soon, so hopefully we can open Blanco's to the wider world.
Yeah, I have a bunch of Blanco's, and I do know that was launched on a fourth version of EOS, so that's very cool. So is Michael's chain, by the way.
Very true.
Yeah, technology. We don't need to know all that stuff, though, right?
We don't.
Huda, do you have a question?
Yeah, it's kind of changing topics, though, if that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I kind of want to get a state of the union on fantasy sports, because it's the Trojan horse that's going to get the masses in, I'm pretty sure, right? I used to think it was games that was going to be like that funnel. It's the thing that was going to bring the masses to NFTs. And just over this bear market, over the past few months, seeing consistently Sorare and DraftKings in the top five, top 10 on our daily rankings, on the weekly rankings, they're always there. They matter this much in a bear market. They're going to matter just as much, if not more, in a bull market. Just what are you guys seeing in the world of fantasy sports? And with NFT specifically, Juan, I'm curious to hear from you and Tyler, you too, for sure.
Yeah, I can jump in and kind of talk about DK Rainmakers, and I'll let Juan kind of talk about Sorare. I mean, Huda, you nailed it. I think what's been very eye-opening for me is across this bear market, I check the Crypto Slam boards, the rankings, you know, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, both, you know, DraftKings and Sorare are there, you know, top five, top 10. I think there was a lot of questions going into this second season here for DraftKings Rainmakers about how the product would do, and I think they would say it's been a pretty smashing success. And I think it's just the combination of the digital collectible, so you can own the player's, you know, digital card and then participate in their upside, you know, if that player has success, as well as part two, being able to plug them into the fantasy games on a weekly basis is a really nice combo. And it's such a natural seg off of the core, you know, fantasy product that DraftKings, FanDuel, others offer up. that it just makes sense. And I think they've seen some really solid adoption at this point. I don't think it's going away. Now they've introduced their PGA product as well. So if anything, they're just kind of expanding into the fantasy, the digital collectibles meets fantasy sports gaming industry. So I think it's going to be up only for a bit.
Like, I played fantasy sports all throughout college with my buddies, and that sounds like super appealing to me. The only reason I haven't signed up, Tyler, is because I'm in Canada, so I believe I hit a snag there from a regional basis. But I hope they fix that or let me join soon. So,
Tyler, do you think the people playing DraftKings, especially right now, are non-NFT people? Like, they're maybe, is that their first time being exposed to NFTs? And is this giving people like their first aha moment with NFTs?
Yeah, I think the core players are likely the existing whales from the daily fantasy sports industry. And I mean, interestingly enough, that core group of folks was also early to adopting NFTs. So I think in my head, it was the poker crew back from when online poker was super hot in, you know, the late 2000s, early 2010s. That group, that cohort, a lot of them migrated to daily fantasy sports, and daily fantasy sports really took off, you know, 2010 to, you know, even through now, but the mid 2010s was kind of a heyday. And I think one aspect of that cohort is they are very open to kind of to watching markets change and spring up and being early adopters. So I think a lot of them have embraced the NFT technology. So, you know, they're coming in from that angle, but at the same time, now I've seen the reverse crossover of the NFT natives who love trading PFPs, who perhaps dabble in art and now are seeing, you know, the headlines come across like, oh, this Sora card just sold for $120,000. Maybe I should check out this sector of the market. So I think it's pulling that group back into.
So interestingly for me, I think we like to put these bucket, put ourselves into buckets that make sense. And so there's fantasy, there's gaming, there's collecting, there's gambling. What's the exciting challenge for all these products is creating a new category that has different components of those. That's obviously a much more difficult challenge, but I think something that's much more exciting. Like, if I'm speaking now for Sorare, like, there are parts of it that are gaming. There's a limit as to how much gaming you can go because the meta is really the sports and the players and real life. There is the collectability aspect, which is of course there only so much as you can go, but it has more that you can do with it because it is digital, not physical. And then on the other side, like all those poker stuff, like there's very different regulatory necessities in order to operate that kind of business. We don't take wagers, we don't require entry fees. So it's really the exciting part is creating a new category. And part of that may appeal to pure gamers, part of that just to regular sports fans, part of that to fantasy. But obviously, we do see a lot of excitement and overlap with fantasy players that like this kind of a game.
Juan, the Sorare Law. I'll do that. The Sorare Law in France. That was, I don't know which body it passed. I don't know the government out there very well. But how does it feel to see, I don't know, almost some reassurance that what you're doing, it's not gambling per se, right? It's its own thing, like you were just saying. Yeah, just curious your thoughts in general around that. Because that was just last week, right?
Look, my understanding is none of this has passed into law yet, but it has passed a specific step of the lawmaking process. I guess what I can say is, yeah, this is based into that, like the idea of this is a new category, a new kind of game that we're trying to build. And so it shouldn't be treated as either that or this. And so with that, we're excited to continue operating and giving great experiences towards our users and continue growing now that we have a little bit more direction towards clarity.
Interesting. Do you guys see like any downsides of the technology in your perspective fields?
Man, who's going to answer that? It's going to risk losing their job, right? No, I think there are downsides. I think we have to be realistic. I mean, you've covered them very much in the questions you've asked. They're purely digital. They're not tangible. The fact that their ownership on chain comes with issues like you need a wallet. I know things like Flow and others are doing things to combat that aspect, but it's still there. Likewise, you know,
the very fact that I think it was Michael was like, oh, we don't want to use the term NFT because of all these things associated with it. But it still is an NFT. That's what it is. Whatever you want to call it, still is an NFT. And so I think the downsides are more in terms of perception, usability, and access. But I don't think that's a downside of the core technology. It's just kind of the initial version of it. It's like when the internet first launched or the World Wide Web first launched, the downside was you had to use dial-up and that sucked. But then we evolved past that and now it's a thing of the past. So I think the downsides are more things that we need to, as a wider community, solve together. Interoperability, for example. It's crazy to think that someone could be a massive NBA fan, they go and buy a bunch of NFTs on Topshop, and then they go to SoRare and they're like, oh, I can't use these over here. Or the other way around. Maybe they play a bunch on SoRare, they win a bunch of games, and then they're like, but now I have to start again on Topshop. And I think we as a community, as the leaders in this space, the sports NFT community, we have to solve that. We have to make it interoperable. We have to make it make sense to users. And I think that that is a big downside that we face right now.
Yeah, so I was just gonna add really quickly, the technology I think is amazing. And I think there's no downside to the technology. What I do think there's downside is the friction to engaging or using it, right? So go, hey, you wanna open a MetaMask wallet? Go to YouTube and watch a 15 minute video. Like that doesn't work for anybody. And but I think the technology at its core is so powerful and is so liberating and is so wonderful. The easier we can get people to onboard into our wallet, our game, our NFT ownership, what have you, and getting them to understand that this is not a scam. A lot of times, we see the uneducated conflate the price of Bitcoin with NFTs. It's like, look, they're mutually exclusive. They're not the same thing. And you can certainly say, well, you know, downstream, there's a trading pair that matters, but you know, NFTs are very different than the price of Ethereum and they should not be, you know, conflated. And so getting people comfortable with the language and the utility and onboarding into it and knowing it is a safe space and it's going to make their life better. Like to me, that's the challenge. The technology in and of itself, again, you can make it more hack proof. Sure. You can make it safer, cold storage, all that stuff. Like all those things matter because security matters. But I will tell you, I think the technology at its core is so wonderful that, you know, we have to continue to kind of, you know, evangelize what that is and let people know, guess what? It's okay. That, you know, people aren't going to steal all your stuff. And, you know, this is why you should feel safe and use it.
Yeah, I think Michael's spot on. And I think something that a lot of the sports NFT companies have done a great job of is trying to reduce as much friction as possible. Like a lot of them have, you know, credit card onboarding. A lot of them have self-custody wallets that they'll spin it up for you during the onboarding process to kind of avoid that 15-minute, you know, MetaMask onboarding, watching the video on YouTube to get this all set up. And I think we're seeing that now, you know, how important that is with like the SocialFi craze. And we don't need to get into SoFi, but part of the reason that some of these apps have had success is, you know, low barriers to entry, low barriers to onboarding and self-custody wallets, mobile apps that you can easily use on your phone. I think we're seeing how important that is in reaching the masses. So I think that's going to continue to be a really important aspect of the sports NFT market.
Yeah, just real quick to add. So William Quigley, who's the founder of Wax and kind of the creator of Tether and one of the first investors of PayPal, was in Disney, you know, consumer marketing and licensing a million years ago. And he said the most important or one of the more important lessons he learned at the Walt Disney Company is customers will opt into things that are convenient, even in the face of security concerns. Right. So it's like if it's easy to use, if it's easy to take in, even if they know there's risk to whatever that risk is, they'll opt in because the friction to do it is simple. And so if you look at the cloud wallet, which we have, you know, north of 15 million users, we use, you know, 10 different SSOs, right? And things that people recognize, Twitch ID, Twitter ID, Discord ID, Google OAuth 2, like it's literally a single click and there's your wallet. And like that has led to massive adoption because again, it's real simple and you know, there's no cost to it. And so I think that's a powerful lesson. Again, removing those chances to drop out of that funnel is a really, really important thing.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have done I followed Wax since the beginning, and honestly, the top series one drop was bringing in the masses. I don't know if you guys had maybe a couple people on this call nodding their heads that had participated, but I knew a lot of people who just wanted to get that drop just for the historical significance of it. So that was very interesting there.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I feel like there is a intersection between technology, culture, and money in the fields that we're all in. Culture being the collectability part, the traditional collectors coming into the space who have nothing, no idea about it. Then you have the technologists who are all about the technology and building that way. And then you have, I guess, on the same end of things, the money people. And it's like you have an intersection of all these people. I just came back from a Bitcoin conference and they think all NFTs are shit coins. Sorry for the terminology there, but like, how do you guys feel about that?
I mean, the more dedicated you are to Bitcoin, the less opportunity you're going to have in the world. I mean, it is the original blockchain, but it can only do so much. And there are two camps, the ones that want to modernize and change Bitcoin to adapt to more use cases. They're the ones that are going to keep it pure. And I don't think those two are ever going to see daylight between them. And the purists are, they're going to get what they want the more they slow down modernization. But great, then you can't do anything else with your Bitcoin other than exchange it for fiat. And you never will. You won't be able to use it in merchants. So I just find it really funny that they're so locked in on that when the technology promises so much more, especially around composability and interoperability. Like, those are the real unlocks for gaming, for fantasy, for sports, for everything, which you really just can't do with Bitcoin.
Well said.
And I'd argue, like, utility NFTs are like the exact opposite of a shitcoin, right? And I think a lot of the folks on this call have unlocked that, right? And even like just the pure digital collectible aspect of the sports NFT market is different than a shitcoin. You know, it has some inherent value as a collectible, whether that's a dollar or $2, but dating back to the traditional world. So I don't know, it's somewhat of a silly argument, but I think it comes back to Michael's, one of his very early points in the show is unlocking utility. And I feel like that's the one piece, it still hasn't like totally been unlocked. We haven't seen the great unlock yet in the sports sector that I think can really drive the next wave. And I think a couple areas that jump out to me is one, like in the ticketing area. I don't think we've totally unlocked ticketing utility and connecting fans via that. And then I still don't think we've tapped into access enough. I think, again, like that's one of my biggest takeaways from the SoFi craze is that people will pay for access. And I think we've seen bits and pieces of it. But it may, a lot of athletes don't want to provide that access, and that's very fair. But if someone is able to figure that out, it feels like a big opportunity for me.
The big thing is getting...
Go for it. Okay, I'll just go real quick. Like, you were talking about culture, and I think that's the key as well. Like, sports are culture. Collecting trading cards, physical trading cards, is cool because there's a culture that sits behind it. It's a fun, it's a pastime, it's a hobby. That's really what it comes down to. And I think we are seeing that trend here when it comes to certain components of sports and NFTs. Like, there is a culture. You have Nike doing the dot swoosh stuff, which is the only way you can get these like pair of Air Jordans, Tinage, or I think whatever they're called. And I think that's the powerful thing that's happening in the other side, which is, these are part of cultures like Adidas Sambas and Jordans. Like, these were used to be the top sports shoes back in the day. Now they're just fun, cool things that you wear and they're part of your culture, like of what looks good, what we're expected to wear in mass. So there's that side, which is very vague, but that's also happening on the side, which is that sports culture is also has inroads with NFTs. And that's part of that access that you're getting at. That just like the card collection games, that's Rivals, that's the video gaming, that's all encompassing what it comes down to. Culture is what shapes economics as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'd like to piggyback on what Tyler said, because I think he's made a lot of good points. But to me, you know, it's not culture. Like, sports is religion, right? Like, if you've ever been on a tube stop after, you know, your team or a team has won or lost a game, you feel the hangs of the loss. You die inside when your team loses. It's not like just this outcome, like, oh well, we lost, on to the next one. It's like, oh my god, I can't believe it. And you talk about it, you replay it, you go on a message board, you watch videos, and you just agonize. And for me anyway, I mean, fan is short from fanatic, right? Like, it literally takes me a day or two over a heartbreaking loss to get over that. There's something so like wired in who we are about our love and our desire to have an affinity to the team that we identify with, and the team is a composition of players in most cases. And so there's something really emotional that if you can tap into what that is, and I don't know how you do that at scale, which is kind of the challenge or the question, but sports are so uniquely disproportionately impactful in my life. Like, I'm having a great day at work. If my team loses for a week, I'm in a terrible mood. Like, but you're making money, you're healthy, your family loves you, you got a bunch of friends. I'm like, so what? We lost. Like, it's literally, it makes zero sense, but that's what sports is. And that's why we love it. And that's what I feel like there's a real ability to connect kind of what I own in my digital wallet to utility, to fandom, to affinity, to loyalty programs, to what have you. Like, there's something there. And to Tyler's point, nobody's cracked the code on what that is, but somebody will. And then it'll be so obvious. Like, oh yeah. Crowdsource for, you know, ride sharing. What a great idea. Of course, duh. Like, there's going to be that aha moment that somebody's going to come up with and we're like, that's great. I totally get it. I'm in.
Part of the challenge that's facing is the sports organizations did not see this trend coming. I mean, for better or for worse, our kind of Web3 world dominated headlines overnight. Suddenly it was numbers go up on a hockey stick, and it's no one's fault, but that's all that most people could see. And therefore, kind of the NFT world, the Web3 world, is viewed as kind of a cash grab because, like, oh, we can get in on this. Think about everyone that added blockchain to their company name back in 2018. Think about the people who've been getting .ai domains. I mean, the poor Antiguan Internet Authority is overwhelmed with requests for .ai domains. It's the same trend that happened. So part of it is now the sports entities of the world need to find the right way to storytell entities and view them as a value add. There's something valuable to the storytelling and to the cultural / socio-religious experience of being a sports fan. And this is just a new tool to do it. It might mean a new app. It might mean building something into an existing app, but it can't just be license out player cards to player likenesses out and then let people speculate. Like, that's not a real product. That's just a pyramid. And that's why we've seen consolidation in sports NFT space. It's why you saw Kenny Digital. I forget who they merged with, but they merged at a very low and a very low deal for their investors. Sweet, I think, also has either folded or laid off people. It's just not that the pure. You can't just build these pyramids. You actually need to build products, and that needs to really be integrated with the existing sports experience. And I think gaming and fantasy are two great engines to do that. But Michael's point: there needs to be that moment where we can break in and it's access, it's tickets to games, it's a chance at the VIP box, it's, you know, something exclusive, but it's still something that a fan can realistically expect, and experimenting with different levels of that access and exclusivity. But it really needs to be integrated into the existing fan experience. It can't just be this new product out there that's just a licensed likeness.
I want to push back a little bit on the speculation thing. I think that's part of collecting. I mean, one of the fun parts for me was collecting some of the top Series 1 rookies that, are under the radar. And I feel like speculation in the sports collectible industry is a thing. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. I think it drove, of course, the NBA Top Shot arc. Right, was heavily speculation driven, which was one of the largest onboarding events, you know, that we saw in 2021. So I think it would be, you know, silly to try to remove speculation from the equation. I think it is absolutely an aspect of this, and I think there's different ways to embrace it. I think there's kind of conflicting views of what like future mass onboarding looks like and how can you have speculation in high asset prices, when you're trying to reach millions and millions of people. And I think that makes sense. At the same time, I think there could be niche products where, bringing in millions and millions of people also brings in new whales who have the funds and want to get into, and have the Victor Wembanyama rookie card from 2023, right? And so I think it's absolutely a cool component, and that's not going to go away.
Do you feel like people that speculate feel like they might be getting in on the next Michael Jordan rookie card or something like that, Tyler? Like, and going for these crazy prices now?
Yeah, I mean, that has to be a part of it, right? And I think what Mark Cuban just had his video this week. He said to remove speculation.
Yeah.
Basically, that was his entire message there, and just buy things you love. So I hope the person who showed up to buy the Victor Wembanyama card actually does love Victor, can sleep at night and not watch that one, because it's probably going to be a little while before they're going to see a liquid return on that. But yeah, I think it's still a core part of this market.
Yeah, I think it always will be, to be honest. I think collection and speculation go hand in hand. I think maybe two of the biggest reasons you collect it are driven by speculation. Either you think the value of this thing will increase for others in the future, that's what you're speculating on, or even the value to it for yourself will increase in the future. You know, maybe you're buying that collectible, be it digital or not, because you want to sell it, or maybe you're buying it because you think you're better to use it in the future in a game. It will mean more to you. You want to give it to your kids. It will be a memory you can hold on to. You know, when someone goes to a concert or an event and they want to keep that ticket stub, or they go and watch an NBA game and they want to buy that moment or that so rare card, they're not doing that because they're just like, oh, I'm not sure if I'll remember. It's more like, I hope in the future I can have this collectible, look back at it, and it can be that memory kind of back in my head. Like, I think that's kind of the speculation as well. And I think the idea of trying to separate them is flawed. I do agree with Cuban's point that, like, just Mark Cuban's point, just buy what you like. That does make sense. But that is still a form of speculation to a degree, I feel. And so I think it would be asinine for us to act like they can ever not exist together. Maybe I'm biased because, as Tyler alluded to, that's why NBA Top Shop blew up, because of all the speculation. But we've seen that what's happened is a lot of people are still in this space and still active because they started speculating and they fell in love. And I think we shouldn't try and focus on that. We also shouldn't try and act like that doesn't exist and won't happen again.
Maybe I'm too stuck in the server bubble right now as I say this, but like, what I think about is scouting. When you're playing with these, you're actually scouting for the top rookie, or you're scouting for like who's going to be the next Premier League star. It's a related process, but it's almost like a more sport-specific process. You're trying to find those talents or the one that's underpriced. It's slightly different because it's based on the utility that you'll find in the game or whatever. But that's I just want to call it, like, it's not all just speculation. Some of it is like scouting, and that's a skill set you're trying to prove. Are you like the best person at finding good prospects from Bolivia? I'm from Bolivia. From Bolivia that might be coming to Europe and might be like really going to crush it there. There's a fun component to that that's like just from the mastery of being a good scout. Again, I'm not saying that's all, but that's an important thing I think we've seen.
I mean, the ultimate product I want to see is kind of like something that touches on the memories. I mean, I remember going to games as a kid and being sad if we lost. I'm very happy if we won. And if we won by a lot, I was really happy. And if my favorite player, which I'm from Indiana, so it was the Pacers, it was Reggie Miller. That was the era I grew up in. Reggie Miller, you know, hit a bunch of three buckets, then I absolutely, you know, wanted to remember that without having to write down the stats. And I think you can have these digital scrapbooks of tickets, and I'd love to see this, where maybe you buy it via like an NFT process, or your ticket is also an NFT, so that the artwork can update based on the outcome of the game. I think there's ripe opportunity for storytelling there. And like, to Luke's point, to Dumbo's point, that like the value to yourself can increase. I mean, there are plenty of players on Rivals in our community that are saying, like, I want Josh Allen from the Bills because they love him. They don't think he's going to increase in value. They don't know if he's going to be a strong card. They just want their players. And so I've told them to hang on. He'll come one day. It's just not today. But I think that tapping into the energy is what sports and NFT products really need to do.
Well, and that's the fantasy effect, right? Like, who's your favorite team? I don't have a favorite team, but I have a bunch of favorite players that are on my fantasy team. Like, that's now how I identify, like Josh Allen, my quarterback, you know, Deebo Samuels is my wide receiver. I have, you know, the such and such defense. Like, that's how we identify. And that's what fantasy has done. I don't know if it's because teams switch around all the time and some teams are good and some teams are bad. And certainly you have your local favorites. But I found, as I played more and more fantasy sports, I found a real love of the individual player and what they allowed me to feel. That's every Sunday, or it's daily baseball, or it's, you know, almost daily basketball. There's a real kind of growth in terms of, you know, like I said, affinity and admiration for those players. And I do feel attached to them as individuals, which again is the power and the enjoyment you get from sports.
Huda, we're going to wrap it up here. I think we've kind of organically covered a lot of the questions that I sent out. Do you have anything that you would like to ask, Screw?
Yeah, something that we could probably do quickly. It's tokenized real world assets that, you know, it's projected to be this massive multi-billion dollar industry, and it's starting to bubble up already. on platforms like Arcade, we see tokenized Pokemon cards, and they're on Magic Eden too, I think. But those tokenized Pokemon cards, I think we're getting Magic the Gathering stuff there soon. I haven't seen much of that in the sports world yet. Curious if you guys see that out there, if it's coming, if it's something any of you are working on. And then, like, along with that, was going to point out, I saw a Mickey Mantle rookie card sell just like a week or so ago at like $1 million. It was $1 million loss on that sale. And I just got to wonder if they had the opportunity to sell that on the blockchain, you know, have such a big pool of buyers potentially, if it would have sold for, you know, as little as it did. But general thoughts about, you know, those tokenized real world assets.
Yeah, there's a group called Dibs that, you know, is on Wax a couple of years ago, and they do that exact business, right? So the Jordan, you can buy a fraction of the Jordan rookie card, and they're an escrow service. They hold the asset, they sell the pieces of it, and they trade just like any other commodity. I think that's a massive, massive thing. And I agree with you. I mean, you see tokenization of Bitcoins, right? Like, everything is going to become fractionalized as the price goes up. It's I think it's just a natural evolution of the business model.
Yeah, I used to work at a company called FanCurve, RIP, but we were doing digital soccer shirts, football shirts, if you're a global fan, but if you're an American, it's soccer. And I talked to so many startups that were trying to figure out how they could get their hands in game-worn shirts and then tokenize them. The big issue is they ran into rights, because you have to get rights from the club and you have to get rights from the player. And that is not easy. So it's really tough to do that commercially. I think if you own it as an individual and then you want to tokenize it, you can. But I think if you're going to be like a corporation, you really have to go to license, which can be quite challenging. I would be interested to see some players try and license their Super Bowl rings in the NFL, to tokenize their Super Bowl rings. I think I've seen some of that kind of get hyped up in headlines, but there's not really been a product delivered on that, to my knowledge.
Yeah, that would be wild. I didn't think of that. It would make perfect sense, though. Yeah.
Right. The problem is rights are tough. Rights are really, really tough. In sports.
Yeah. And by the way, I think it's Courtyard that has been doing those Pokemon packs, not Arcade. They do other real world assets. But yeah, just that world fascinates me.
I think the trend is coming. I think there are a lot of benefits to it. Absolutely. At the same time, like, there are, they come with some cons or negatives, right? So they do introduce middlemen into the process. So you are still reliant on the company that's physically storing and grading and performing ongoing maintenance for the physical assets. So I think that is something to at least be aware of, you know, if you're diving headfirst into, you know, tokenized real world assets. But I think there are certainly many use cases where it does in fact make sense. And the liquidity unlock, I think, is one of the bigger upsides for me. It's compared in the crypto world, Web3 versus the physical world. I think it's there's going to be more liquidity in the crypto side. So that's a big win.
Interesting point, though, because I look at blockchain as like one of the reasons it's so useful is it eliminates the middleman. And you're right. I again, hadn't thought of that. That is adding the middleman there. Yeah, something I need to think about a little more.
Well, lastly, before we all go, if you guys wanted to mention something that you're excited about on your respective platforms or projects that you cover, that would be awesome to just let everybody know and our audience know what you guys are up to.
When does this go out?
It goes out probably in about next week or so. Okay. You want to start, Dumbo?
Yeah, I mean, look, on the NBA Top Shot side, it's the new NBA season, so there's a bunch of stuff going on. We're launching a new game mode that I think will be out by the time this goes live, and if not, I'm in big trouble, but we'll see. So I won't say too much more about that. And then NFL Day as well is continuing to put out great content, and they'll be doing stuff in the lead up to the playoffs, no doubt. So if you haven't checked those two platforms out, especially Top Shot, out in a while, I'd recommend it. I think a lot of people started off in Top Shot and then jumped into other stuff, and it's been a minute since it went back, but the platform has changed significantly. There's way more you can do with NFTs than back in the start of 2021. There's still a very active and diehard community, but there's also a bigger, wider ecosystem as well. Third-party games like fantasy games and trading and stuff like that. So my main thing would be just like go play around with Top Shot if you haven't already. I imagine almost everyone in this call has a few moments. Go dust them off and see what you can do with it.
I will. Thank you. Juan?
On the server side, look, we allow you to play with the real world players and their performance, how to determine things. What's been happening more and more recently is we're bridging that digital physical divide by giving more real world experiences. You can go play, fly with the team in AC Milan. You can go get a Paolo Banchero jersey, all these things as part of playing the game and winning rewards. So there's a lot coming up for the remainder of the year. I would encourage you to check it out. Some really cool experiences and assets are up for grabs for people that want that.
Thanks, Juan. Michael?
Yeah, I would just encourage people to go to the Epic Games Store and download Brawlers, which we think is one of the most fun to play Web3 games in the world. The core game mechanic was designed by Richard Garfield, who created Magic the Gathering. He's really outdone himself with kind of the cleverness of our core game design. And then if you happen to link your Amazon account to it, you get free stuff as well. In addition to the free stuff you get for downloading it on the Epic Games Store, we give away thousands of dollars every month in esports related kind of tournaments. So come on and join the fun. We think we've got a great community, a great game, and we're building a North Star that others can be proud of.
Cool. Tyler?
Yeah, if you're playing DraftKings Rainmakers and you haven't checked out the Lucky Trader optimizer tool, you're doing yourself a disservice. Go check that out. It's the only and best tool on the market that allows folks to optimize all the cards in their portfolio to build optimal lineups for various tournaments. So go check that out. And then other than that, yeah, we will be continuing to cover the entire sports sector. So check out the website luckytrader.com or just follow our X page as well.
Thank you so much, and Jonathan.
Yeah, for Mythical Games, NFL Rivals, we just kicked off. I mean, today in recording, we kicked off our Autumn Rush programs. Check that out. Score some acorns and get exclusive prizes. We'll have a winter program coming up in December that will dovetail into playoffs. And at the end of November and into December, we'll be running a contest where we're giving away tickets to an actual NFL game from a big team this season. I don't want to say which one, but I'll say it'll probably be sunny when they're playing in January where they're based.
So
it won't be a cold winter trip in January. And hopefully we'll have something cooking up for the Super Bowl in the meantime. So in the coming months, we'll be hopefully rolling that out. It'll be exciting. So, and then Nitro Nation's out. Blanco's Bowl will be coming out hopefully in the first half of next year.
Thank you, Jonathan. And I just wanted to thank everybody for making this call today. I know it's hard on our schedules to sync up like this. It was a pleasure having you guys on here. I actually thought of a show title while somebody was talking. I think I'm going to call it the Big Brains of NFT Sports. How about that? Or Sports NFTs, something like that. Thanks, guys. It was a pleasure having you on. And again, Huda and I appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys. Make sure to Photoshop our heads to look big and brainy for that.
Yeah, for the thumbnail. Nice.
Big head mode, right? The old school NBA Jam big head
mode. Yeah, it's not a bad idea at all.
Always a favorite, right? Yeah.
Great. Yeah, thank you, guys. That was great.